Jake Eisenberg. He joins us every Friday throughout the baseball season. I do have to start immediately, though, with the Milwaukee trip. When we had you on last week, you said maybe some haunted houses or hotels, I should say, out there and everything. Everything treat you okay in Milwaukee?
Yeah, I had a feeling we were going to start there. No, Milwaukee was great. No supernatural activity to report. All restaurants and meals stayed where they should. It was a solid trip from that perspective.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
And Jake's a little weird, though, because I always think of Miller Park, man. I know it's American Family and all this, but that's Brew City, man. It's like a beer city. That ballpark is synonymous as Miller Park. It's just weird calling it an insurance stadium.
I mean, I guess it's a name, you know, like any other ballpark name. I mean, Guaranteed Rate Field is now just Rate. You know, Minute Maid Park is now Dykin Field. I mean, at the end of the day, like, they're all corporations, aren't they? So, like, they can have their naming rights. That's one thing that I love about Kauffman Stadium is that it's not, you know, a company, at least for now.
My favorite was Enron.
I think that helps it. That helps it stand out. You know, heck, even Wrigley. Wrigley's a company, you know, if you really want to go that far. But, yeah, I don't know. It's not that weird. It's just a building with a name.
One of the biggest stories in sports for the first week of the season, of course, is these torpedo bats. Overblown, like, not a big deal, just need to wait and see. Where are you at, and what have maybe you heard? I don't know if you've talked to some players about it.
Yeah, I think it's overblown. I've talked to a couple players about it. I've talked to a couple coaches about it. I've talked to some other people around the league about it. And the sense that I get and where I've landed on it is that it's kind of similar to, you might remember a few years ago, that the axe handle was all the rage. Every guy was using that axe handle and trying to get a little bit more power in those wrists and some more stability. And there were some guys that loved it and some guys that tried it and didn't like it and some guys that swore by it. And then there was a few years ago, Paul Goldschmidt, you remember, was using that giant hockey puck counterweight knob, and he went on to win NL MVP, and everyone was like, oh my goodness, we got to use a counterweight knob now. Basically, like, it's innovation in terms of, you know, bat technology, so to speak, but I do think that it's similar to the other steps in the sense that some guys are going to love it, some guys are going to try it and find out it's not for them, some guys are going to just keep doing what they're doing because it's worked for them, and I think that overall, I don't know that you're going to look up at the end of the season and be like, oh, this guy's numbers are that much better because he used a torpedo bat. I think it's kind of whatever makes you feel good in the box.
I think when Michael Kay brought it up, more and more people started talking about that point. The funny thing is Aaron Judge is off to a great year. He didn't use it. Aaron Judge says, look at my numbers.
Yeah. And that's exactly the point. Is like, Aaron Judge isn't using it. There are other guys around the league that are off to great starts that aren't using it. And some guys are using it and are off to great starts. And maybe it's part of that. Maybe it's something else. Maybe it's a mental thing where you're looking at the barrel and you're saying, okay, this looks a little bigger. I'm not saying it's nothing. I don't think it's the end all be all of baseball hitting in 2025.
And the one thing too, Jake, is other teams are doing it. The Twins catcher uses it. The Cubs have been using it. The Rays use it. I mean, Giancarlo Stanton allegedly used it last year, even during the playoffs, which, you know, they faced the Royals, of course, but it's not like the Yankees are the only ones doing it, and people and players inquire about it. I'm sure the Royals have inquired about it too.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's a little bit overblown. I think it's a fun thing to talk about, but I don't know that it's really affecting outcomes in the way that it's being purported that it does.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. All right, let's talk about this Royals team. First time through the rotation. Maybe you didn't have the length in terms of the outings, but Cole Reagan's bounced back immediately as well, even in his second go. What do you make of what we've seen so far from the starting pitching staff?
Man, Reagan's stuff is so, so good. That fastball was really explosive the other day. And, you know, 10 Ks, a sixth, you know, career double-digit strikeout game. He's going to be just fine. I think the first turn through the rotation, I think there's probably, and I'm not sure that they would say this, but I think there's probably a little bit of an adjustment to pitching in cold weather for the first time. Now, that's true for the other guys, too, you know, on the other side of the field, but I think that's true for everybody. And so the grip might feel a little bit different. The weather's a little bit different, obviously. I thought Chris Bubich looked phenomenal. I mean, if that's what the Royals are going to get out of Chris Bubich, you know, every time through, I mean, that's the guy who's penciled in as your fourth or fifth starter, and that's after your three-headed monster of Reagan's, Lugo, and Waka. I thought Lorenzen was pretty solid, too, against the Brewers in his season debut. You know, ultimately, he gets charged for three runs, but he still struck out seven over the course of 5 1/3. So I think this is a rotation that has a chance to do some things that were pretty similar to what last year's rotation did. And ultimately, that gives this team a chance to win night in and night out.
How do you look at the series, Jake? And listen, the series that happened, you know, in April, they don't really matter in the grand scheme of things, but it's Baltimore. Royals went 2-4 against Baltimore last year. Of course, the postseason success they had against Baltimore, they're not off to a start that they won at 3-5. And I'm sure the Royals would like to flip their record too, but you know, in the grand scheme of things, when you look at these two teams, you know, the Orioles, one of these teams that we look upon as, you know, one of the teams to beat in the American League, and there's the Royals that made the postseason as well. In the grand scheme of things, this is actually a pretty big series.
I mean, in the grand scheme of things, I think they're all pretty big series. Every 162 games, they all count the exact same amount when you look up at the end of September. So, yeah, every win counts, every loss counts exactly the same. And I think back to when the Royals and Orioles were playing very early on last season, too. You know, the Royals were at Camden Yards and played a really tight series against the Orioles. There were a couple of blown lead losses in there. And then the Orioles came to Kauffman Stadium. That was another really tight series. They were like 2 weeks apart in April last year. And we kind of looked around at the time, at least upstairs in the booth, and we were like, you know, these two teams, they might link up again come October, and it'll be completely different teams and fields once we get there, but they'll still be familiar with each other. And lo and behold, that's exactly what happened. And they played two really close games in the wild card round too. So all of these games are important because they give you a foundation for what might happen, you know, 5-6 months down the road. And as far as this series is concerned, I expect to see something very similar to what we saw last year in the playoffs and in the regular season, is close games between two really good teams that have young, dynamic lineups, really solid pitching, excellent, you know, bullpens. I think the Royals might have the edge in starting pitching. Bullpens this early on, I'll give you that thing. Bullpen roles are still, you know, a little bit fluid, but the Royals back end, Estevez, Urseg, Harvey have been lights out for the most part. I think these are two teams that match up really, really well, and it's understandable why I think they're going to be kind of neck and neck with each other over the next several years.
We're talking to Jake Eisenberg here on 96.5 The Fan. Of course, the Royals open up their series against Baltimore tonight. 6:40 first pitch right here on your home for the Royals, 96.5. So offensively, I don't feel like anything surprised me to this point, Jake. Like, if you tell me on a given night last year or this year already that maybe Bobby and Salvi and Vinny, and I guess let's throw India in the mix, if those guys aren't really on, it's going to be a struggle. You know, it's going to be tough to rely on 5-9 in the order, especially with where things are at right now in left and right field offensively. What stood out offensively for you? Has anything surprised you?
I can't say that anything has surprised me. I also think, and this is where I'll kind of agree with Bink a little bit, that it's six games,
right?
And it's hard to read into anything statistically in a span of six games, you know, really, really good or not so good or anywhere in between. So I think that you kind of got to wait and see a little bit for maybe, you know, 15 games, 20 games, you know, a couple of weeks before the statistics at least start to settle out. And you can kind of see maybe some actual trends of what's going on. I think it's a little bit too early to say, hey, this guy is going to be on fire, or hey, this guy looks really overmatched. I think it's too early for that.
And I think it's also fun. Gunnar Henderson supposed to be in the lineup for the Orioles. He's been out the first seven games of the year for the Orioles. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of Bobby Witt Jr. talk and Gunnar Henderson, the shortstops for the respective clubs. But it looks like he's playing. Have you heard? I mean, he's supposed to play this entire series. Is that correct?
That's what I've heard too. I haven't seen anything official, but that's what I've been hearing.
Okay, the stars there, and Adley Rutschman, and everything else with these games. Where do you come out on uniform gate, Jake? And I'm saying this because the other night I'm doing a show, right? The Royals were in Milwaukee. They wore the powder blue shirts and the pants. And of course, people, I said, well, I think they'll, you know, they're still going to go back to the gray, but it's the opening day in Milwaukee. They wore the uniforms opening day in Kansas City. Of course, they wear them on Saturdays. But then the text line was telling me that it's not the case. They're going to wear those on the road. So I checked with the Royals. I even texted Steve Stewart. And yes, the grays are still part of it, Jake, but I don't think there's an official road uniform, is there? But I do expect to see the grays on the road most of the time, don't we?
I mean, that would be my expectation, too. I mean, the word that I got about wearing them in Milwaukee on their opening day was simply that they're really cool. And you know what? I have to agree. Like, they are really cool.
Agree.
Why do you need even more of a reason than that? You know, wear them as much as you want, especially if you're going to put up 11 runs. I don't think those two things are a coincidence. But, you know, that being said, the powder blues are awesome. And I'm all for, you know, wearing them whenever the guys want to wear them. The gray's a good look. The royal blue on the road for day games is a good look. The home whites are a good look. The powder blues on Sunday with the white pants and the blue stripe are a good look too. I mean, look, across the board, I think the Royals have a really nice set of uniforms. If I'm not mistaken, and don't go with me on this in totality, but I'm pretty sure tonight is the City Connects because it's a Friday night home game. And I love the Royal City Connects. So I'm excited to see those.
I think they're the best in the league, to be honest with you, Jake. I have the hat, the one they wore with the powder blues on Saturday, but it's also their batting practice hat too, right?
The Art Deco
with the white on the front. The white on the front and the crown.
He's talking about the
hat they wear with the powder blues. They also wear that for batting practice, don't they?
Powder blues. Yeah, those are really clean. Yeah, those are clean. The helmets look incredible.
That's what I'm saying. I think the helmets are better than the hat. The gloss helmet look. I agree. Is so much better.
Whenever you get a helmet that matches the uniform, like they got the City Connect helmets too. I think that's next level.
Before we let you get out of here, I know you're at the big league level right now. I have to ask you about Jack Caglione because you interacted with him in spring training. He makes his AA Arkansas debut, I believe, this evening down in Tulsa where the Naturals begin their season. Just in your interactions with him, the fan base is fired up. Just what has stood out about how, I guess, he carries himself, and what would you tell fans that are obviously very, very excited one day to see him up with the Royals?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's exciting, right, to be able to look into the not-too-distant future at various guys that are in the minors and just getting started and dream on them a little bit and see, what could be, later this year or, a couple of years down the road. And it's not just CAG, too. Like, there's a bunch of other guys. Lewinder Avila struck out, I think it was 10 or 11 the other night in Omaha. John Raves hit a couple of home runs. Like, there are other guys that are making some noise in the minors, too. As far as Jack's concerned, This is the thing that kind of stood out to me in spring training, just kind of, chatting with him a little bit, observing him in the clubhouse, talking to the guys that were his locker mates, like Alec Marsh. I asked Alec, how he was doing and all that stuff. And what stood out to me was here's a guy who has played at the highest level of collegiate baseball for a premier program and gone to the College World Series and been there, done that in terms of media and spotlight and XYZ. And like, he's got that, big college experience polished to him, when it comes to a media sense, and polished him when it comes to a maturity sense. At the same time, here's a guy who's also the sixth overall pick and knows how talented he is and is coming into spring training, understanding, that he's going to start in AA or AAA or wherever, but knows that he's maybe not all that far off, and certainly comes into the clubhouse thinking like, okay, like I'm here and I'm here for a reason. I can be able to handle some of my stuff. What struck me is how well he balanced the understanding, how well he balanced knowing that he's a really, really good baseball player, but not necessarily giving off a vibe of that he's supposed to be there or that it would be ridiculous if he weren't there. He did not take for granted the fact that he was in the big league clubhouse this year and knew that that was both an honor and a learning experience and an opportunity for him to grow. He knows he's a really, really good baseball player. He was also soaking up everything like a sponge. And it was really cool to, observe, fly on the wall, how Vinny Pasquantino took him under his wing and really made him feel comfortable in a big league clubhouse for the first time. That's not always the case, for guys who are entering a big league clubhouse for the first time. And I think that speaks to the level of camaraderie that exists in the clubhouse at Kauffman Stadium and how that filters down through the organization and the type of culture that the Royals have created for themselves and the rest of the organization. And I think that puts Jack Caglione and whoever comes up from the minors at any point in a really, really good position to succeed. And that's what impressed me about Jack, was how he had this affability and joy in being where he was. Holy smokes, I'm in a big league clubhouse. This time last year, I was playing a midweek game against St. Mary's or whatever, and also being incredibly talented and playing really well in spring training.
Jake, I've talked to you for a long time, even back in the minor leagues. I have to ask you this question. Now that you're here at the big league club and doing your thing, you're going to be calling records at some point. You might be calling world championships at some point. We discussed this. Baseball records seem to be hallowed. People talk about them, the 500 home runs, the mile marks. They're a big deal in baseball. Compared to the football, I think it's cyclical because we care about what they did on Sunday because of fantasy football, the expanded schedule now, watered down that. But Alex Ovechkin sits three goals away from breaking the great one's record. I don't think people talk about it, but that is a major record in sports. How do you view things? Why does baseball records seem to be the most important?
think it has to do with longevity, Bink. Honestly, I mean, Major League Baseball has been around since, you know, the 1870s, 1880s, you know, in its modern form since 1901. And I think there's so much history with baseball, and you go back to the history of box stores or even statistics. I mean, the box store itself was pioneered by Henry Chadwick, who was a newspaper writer back in the 1900s, and newspapers and baseball were so tied together. And, you know, getting that newspaper in the morning and also checking out the statistics in the box scores was such a part of the joy of the game early on, and the growth of the game early on, you know, the dead ball era and then all throughout, that I think statistics and baseball statistics, they have such a longevity and they have such an aura about them because of how hallowed they are. And I'm not saying that that's not necessarily true for, you know, hockey or football or basketball, but as major sports in the United States of America, those have, you know, much less history overall than Major League Baseball does. You know, Major League Baseball has over 100 years of history. You know, NHL, NBA, NFL, you know, goes back to the 60s or 50s or 40s, or there's just not as much time. There's not as many hallowed greats simply because of the longevity of the thing. And I think that's why baseball statistics stand out. I also think that it has to do with the fact that there is a baseball game every single night for a 6-month span, that it is part of the American, and really the North American, when you include Canada, it's part of the North American consciousness for a 6-7 month span every single night, in a way that other sports aren't. I've said this about baseball many, many times, and this is one of the reasons why I love the game, is baseball to me is the closest athletic endeavor to the human experience that we have, where you are at it every single day. And more often than not, you know, when it comes to baseball and when it comes to life too, you're going to fail. You hit 300, you're a Hall of Famer, but guess what? That means you failed 7 out of 10 times. And the crux of baseball is how you deal with that failure and get back up and try and do a little bit better the next day. And I think that's very much the human condition as well, and part of the American condition as well, is how do we do a little bit better tomorrow? How do we make our lives a little bit better tomorrow for ourselves and for our families and for our communities? And I think that's why the human condition and why the sport of baseball are so closely tied together. And so when we see greatness on the baseball field, 500 home runs, or, you know, a batting title for Bobby Witt Jr. last year at 332, I think we appreciate the greatness striving through the grind of everyday suffering and excellence. And we can appreciate that in a very special way. And that, to me, is why baseball is so special and why baseball records are a little bit more hallowed than others, maybe.
Jake Eisenberg, thinking of records, Bink was asking you about records there. This weekend, you know, you're just going to have a no-hitter to call. It's going to be nice for you.
Yeah, sign me up for that. That'd be great.
We'll be listening. Thanks, Jake.
Take care, guys.